Well, we've all seen the many green products available on the shelves now, from tote bags to reusable straws to clothing made of recycled plastic bottles. But do they really make a difference? Or at some level, are they just an excuse to buy more stuff? Here to tell us more is Stephanie Parker, a freelance environmental writer who just wrote a piece about this in ENSEA, the media outlet of the Institute on the Environment at the University of Minnesota. Welcome to the Roadhouse, Stephanie Parker.
Hi, thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, Stephanie, I see you are a native of New York City, and you made it across the pond to the mountains of eastern Switzerland.
Yes.
But now you are back in the States.
Yes, just for actually a couple more days. I go back home to Switzerland on Wednesday. So, yeah.
Well, thanks so much for making time for us on the Roadhouse here tonight up in the Great White North. Have you ever been to northern Minnesota?
I have not. I have driven through Minnesota, but I don't remember. From North Dakota, so maybe like in the northern part of the state, but basically I don't, and it was, you know, it was on the way through, unfortunately. But I would love to come at some point.
Well, you are here. You're here in spirit tonight, so thanks so much. And your article now definitely had the provocative title, eye-catching title, Do Environmentally Responsible Products Help the Planet, or Do They Just Get Us to Buy More Stuff?
Yeah.
What did you discover?
I feel like I wrote 1,200 words and probably still didn't really answer the question. But I think overall they probably do get us to buy more stuff. That being said, you know, we were always buying stuff. We are always buying stuff. So it's something that's hard to parse out. It's something that I sort of wrote the article because I wanted to answer the question, or I was struggling with the question. I enjoyed writing the article a lot, and I think I was able to put a lot of hopefully good information out there, but I'm not really convinced that I have necessarily still like really answered the question. I think it's also personal. It probably depends on different people.
That's right. That's right. And it's certainly in this age, this modern age, and the choices, consumer choice is very important for us now. And talk about consumer consciousness, if that's a thing, when did it become so, and what does it mean?
Yeah, it's a good question when it became a thing. I don't really have a definitive answer for that. I mean, I guess in some ways it's been a thing for a long time. I mean, you know, looking back even, you know, 60s and 70s, people were really concerned about what they were eating. There was a lot of sort of back to the land movement. But I feel like in recent years, especially with growing awareness of climate change and plastic pollution, you know, there was the really famous turtle, you know, there was a viral video of a turtle that I think had a plastic straw up its nose a few years ago, and I remember that really set off a lot of the backlash against plastic straws specifically. So I feel like really in the last few years, it's gotten to be a really big deal of, you know, having eco-labels and buying, you know, reusable straws and reusable bags as opposed to using plastic bags. I feel like a lot of states have started doing plastic bag bans. A lot of companies either have or are saying we will ban plastic straws by X year. So I feel like it's definitely becoming more and more in the consciousness.
You know, I can agree, Stephanie. I'm that middle-aged man that, you know, grew up in the 80s and 90s in the age of sort of conspicuous consumption.
Right, yeah.
Disposable plastics sort of were all the rage. You know, it was just like this idea that there's plenty of room. And climate change, certainly not on the radar back 20, 30 years ago. But, boy, lots changed in just the last 10 years. I find, like, this rise of sustainability and renewable energy and just all sorts of changing now of the economies and the real consumer market is really what you were after in your article. You talked a lot about choices. And if we could go to the straw, because this is ironic, my kids just got the metal straw pack, the 4-pack of metal straws from the co-op. And I said, geez, that's just more waste.
Right.
Do you really need a straw? I mean, what is it about a straw that's so important?
Yeah. I have to say, I do enjoy drinking out of a straw. I used to have one of those big plastic water glasses that had a plastic straw in it that you would refill all the time. But yeah, I mean, first of all, yeah, you don't. I mean, some people, there are certain like accessibility issues. There are people who need straws, but most of us probably don't need straws. And like, why are we sort of, you know, instead of just deciding like we will not use straws unless we are people who need them, deciding that we're going to, you know, make metal straws, and then we're going to buy metal straws, and now we have 4 metal straws in a plastic package. You know, it's sort of, it's hard to know if that's a helpful effort or if that ends up being a more harmful effort.
Well, you spoke with one of the leading straw manufacturers, I believe. Mm-hmm. It was sort of the on trend. And
yeah.
Didn't she have some insights on this as well that were just counter to the whole cause?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. So Emma Rose Cohen, who is the CEO of Final Straw, and also I think she was the co-founder, she created this foldable metal straw, and it comes in a really cute carrying case, and you can, I think, put it on your keychain, so it's always with you. And so, you know, she seems to, you know, it seems to be a really important thing to her that there's less disposable plastic straws out there. But even she admits, the non-plastic straws, the metal straw trend, you know, people are making more and more metal straws, and now they're like these, you know, $1 metal straws that come in from, you know, wherever, China, you know, and you're buying tons of them. Even in the article, I talked to Abby, the person who I sort of lead the story with, she's the one who actually told me about a Final Straw. And then she even admits, like, yeah, but I have like 4 other sort of these other kinds of straws just like in my house. So yeah, I think even Emma sort of admitted that while she sees herself as taking away from some of this plastic pollution, she also recognizes her role in adding another kind of waste to the environment. And also, you know, if you're making something, there's a lot of manufacturing environmental costs behind that.
That's right. Trendiness, trendy products, and mm-hmm. knockoffs, and kind of never-ending spin on consumption. Let's talk about this habit, and particularly in the developing world. I'm fearful that as Americans, we're ridiculous when it comes to consumption and pollution and carbon footprint, and yet lots of countries are trying to emulate us, and there's this idea that we're mm-hmm. successful and that you need an iPhone 10 and a SUV to be successful. Is that the root of a lot of this problem, is that the rest of the world's trying to catch up, keep up, be living the good life like Americans? Did you look at that at all?
I didn't look at that a ton, just because, you know, the scope of the article. I mean, I have to imagine that still overall, like, in terms of developing countries, I know in terms of emissions, developed countries are still doing like a much larger percentage. And it is sort of it's this hard line to sort of say, like, we did all this, you know, like I got to drive cars and have an iPhone and I got to have everything, but now we know it's bad, so now you can't have it. You know, there's this hard sort of line of that. But yeah, I mean, I think it is a problem that we see success as money, and then what do you do with the money? You get stuff. And I have, and I'm totally guilty, by the way. Like, I'm not some, you know, I am totally guilty of all of these things. I mean, maybe not everything, but, you know, I have so much more stuff than I need. And I don't know how you just kind of stop that. It's like, really, it's like my big crisis all the time is like, how do we, because part of it is you can have sustainable, you know, even the most sustainable stuff is still stuff. And if we keep creating, you know, things, you know, even if we keep creating reusable things and they get better and better and they're made out of biomaterials, for example, I mean, we're just still sort of entrenching that culture that we need all this stuff.
Yeah, it's difficult to see an end. We're speaking with Stephanie Parker. She's a freelance environmental writer. She joins us on the Roadhouse talking about a new article in Ensia about environmentally responsible products, whether or not they're helping the planet or getting us to consume more and not feeling so bad about it. Let's talk a little bit about the psychology of consumption, Stephanie, as you touched on this. Some interesting studies here where, like, folks that they have the reusable shopping bag, so they're thinking, oh, boy, look at me, I'm being sustainable. But then actually they're purchasing goods that aren't suitable, aren't sustainable. Is there a kind of a, what's the word here, where you're feeling like you're doing, you know, your best, and it's giving you license to do worse?
Yeah, I've heard that called different things. One of the things I've heard is the halo effect, that, you know, because you're doing one, or maybe that's sort of more that, you know, if you're in an environment that feels sustainable or that feels healthy, you sort of assume that everything in that environment is like good and healthy and that it's okay to sort of purchase more of it. But the study, yes, I talked to Uma Karmarker, and you know, basically it shows that on the one hand, if you bring a reusable bag to a grocery store, because the study was specifically on grocery stores, it'll sort of, as you're shopping, sort of signal back to you, like, you're a sustainable person, you're a person who cares about these things, you're a person who makes those good choices. And so in some ways that can maybe help you make good choices because you sort of have that constant feedback. But on the other hand, it can sort of also tell you, well, you've made some, like, you know, you've done such a good job, you've made some good choices. So, like, what's the harm in buying a couple extra things? Like, you did such a good job today.
That's right. Fill your reusable bag up with plastic bottled water.
Yeah.
Because you'll recycle the bottles and... Oh my.
But,
so,
and I think it is also fair to put out there, like, it is, you know, even when you do your best, it can be really hard to avoid this stuff. You know, I mean, things, you know, your vegetables can come in packaging. You know, it is hard to avoid this stuff. So yeah. It's both.
And we're not here to judge. We don't want you to feel guilty.
No, I mean,
let
I'm
that guilt
go. I'm both judging and judged. So
we are. let's touch on this fascinating Danish study where they looked at bags. You know, there's a big, mm-hmm. big topic now is paper versus plastic versus reusable plastic. What are some conclusions here?
Yeah, and that was actually one of the things that sort of made me want to write this article in the first place. Because I think that study sort of came out, I would say maybe about a year ago, or at least that's when I feel like it gained traction and I remember hearing about it. And it basically says, you know, because when you think about plastic bags, you think about you use them and you throw them out and they pollute the landscape and they don't biodegrade, and which is all true. Whereas you have a reusable tote bag and you fill it up and you keep it in your house and it's like great because it doesn't go into a landfill. And even if it does one day, it's made out of better materials. But there is like the effort, there's the energy that goes into making these items, these, you know, canvas tote bags or, you know, cotton, all that stuff. And so what the study showed is depending on the material that was used to make these tote bags, I think it was if you use regular cotton, you would need to use it 7,000 times before it sort of made up for the energy that was used in making it. And for an organic cotton bag, because organic cotton needs a higher input of water, I think it would be like 20,000 times. And that's, again, that's just based on the energy put into making it. It's not counting what happens after you're done with it. But that's still, like, that's a lot to think about. And I don't know about you, but I don't, like, I have way more than one tote bag. So that's, you know, if I add up 7,000 times, you know, the 10 tote bags in my house, I have, like, 70,000 shopping trips I need to make. So it's hard because it's like a life cycle assessment. And I think that's sort of what can be missing is you can look at the end of life, which is the waste portion, and say, well, that's really bad. Or you can look at the beginning and say, well, it took a lot of energy to make that. And it's sort of figuring out, you know, it's hard to find what is that one number of, like, what is the best item? Because there's different ways to measure these things.
Well, certainly some eye-opening findings for me, at least, that the you know, the idea that the disposable plastic bag, in at least this study on the science they used, was perhaps the way to go in terms of carbon footprint and the amount of resources taking for production and recycling.
Yeah, in terms of production, yeah.
And that the organic cotton is probably the worst.
Right. Again, in terms of, production, but then you think about, well, you know, what is maybe the organic cotton was better for the land than the conventional cotton. So it's so like multifaceted. It's, you know, it's like such a, I don't know, it would be super, super intense math to ever sit down and be able to literally value like one thing versus the other, because there's so many metrics you can value things on. And that's not even looking at like, you know, was it produced humanely, like who made these things, you know, are they mistreated? Are they paid? You know, it's so sure. many, you can drive yourself crazy. Obviously I have.
Yeah. Well, the point here, I think, is to consume less. I mean, I always give the option of, you know, paper, plastic, or skip it. Do you really mm-hmm. need to buy this? I don't know. Also good insights, I think, is the idea of like repurposing the cardboard boxes that the package mm-hmm. that the stuff was already shipped in. I see this happening a lot at the grocery stores where they'll just put out the cardboard boxes
yeah.
out front.
I've seen that too.
And it's a great way to repurpose packaging material that would have otherwise been off to recycling. How about a macro yeah. question on recycling,
yeah.
Stephanie? Is it, I've got this suspicion that the recycling, just like any other industry, is like big business, big money, big oil, and it that you consume as much in the recycling process as you would in any other manufacturing process.
Yeah, so this is something I really want to know more about, because there's been a lot of really interesting articles and research coming out about recycling recently, because one thing that's been happening is China used to take a lot of our recycling, and they don't want it anymore. And so one thing that I sort of have read and heard is that a lot of the recycling that you carefully stored and do whatever doesn't get recycled because there's no market for it. And then there's also the fact, yeah, like, for example, if you have a glass jar, it has to be really well washed. So there's energy that goes into all of it. I think probably some things I've heard like still glass is a really good thing to recycle because it takes more to make it. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I guess like the real big takeaway is like buy less if you can, like, yes. Because there are maybe better and worse things to buy and better and worse ways to get rid of it. But there's like nothing, we haven't really solved it, or we haven't even come close to like really solving it yet.
Well, and I think you closed the article with a bit of a scare with, you know, you think it's bags and straws and that we're really making a difference, but what about big business? You know, what about China corporations and what's, you know, is it that bad that we as consumers really aren't making that much of an impact?
Right. I mean, I think I saw something that's basically like 70% of emissions are coming from, you know, maybe it was like, you know, like from some relatively small number of large companies. And that's the thing is sort of, I mean, it's hard because I think the consumer element is important. And I think our culture of consumption is dangerous and it's, you know, way too much. But at the end of the day, it feels like we're now taking the blame for something that these big companies have done. And they've kind of shifted the messaging onto like, you know, well, if you had a metal straw, that would be better. And if you had a reusable tote bag, and why aren't you buying this thing and that thing? And so now we're all mad at each other for using plastic straws and for having plastic bags. And we've forgotten about the real big polluters.
Yes. Hydrofluorocarbons.
Yeah. Like there's some worse stuff out there.
Oh, I know.
There's some bad stuff out there.
These modern times. Well, Stephanie, yeah. I appreciate your insights. I appreciate your work here. I see you have a focus on invasive species, coffee, ag, tech, and public health. And I must say, I love all of those topics.
I do, too. It's always funny to say that I love invasive species because, I mean, you know, I don't love invasive species, but I find them to be really interesting.
It fits your repertoire. So any insights on what you're working on now?
So right now I'm actually working sort of on another you know, not really related, but on the death or the slow death of grocery stores in rural areas in the United States. There's a lot of issues with small towns not having access to, you know, to grocery shopping because a lot of them close because there's not enough people, and then the people leave because there's no grocery stores, and it's a public health issue. Obviously, most people like food, so need food to live. So yeah, that's what I'm working on right now.
Well, keep it up. And
certainly
we'll remind everyone to buy less. Less is
more. Well, I have to remind myself as well.
Well, I just got to share this funny Halloween story, Stephanie. So I've got two boys. There was like a panic at the last minute. They needed a costume.
Yep.
I went into one of these Halloween costume clearing houses and got physically sick at the consumerism of it all. You know, this idea of like plastic Halloween costumes and the disposability of them, and like, can we just like get rid of holidays?
Right. And then you feel kind of sad. You know, it's hard because then you feel kind of sad about it because these are things that, like, I'm sure, you know, that brings your children real joy. So I mean, it's just crazy. Like, how often are they going to wear those? You know, and then you should tell them if they want a Halloween costume, they have to wear it now, like every day to school or something.
And I do have, I do have a happy ending here, Stephanie, because I did pass on any new purchases. We went back to the vault. Of course, there's lots of old costumes in there that got recycled. So
that's the way. Reduce, yeah. That's what it is. First is reduce and reuse.
And soon to be refuse. So. All right, Stephanie Parker, thanks for joining us on the Roadhouse.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Good luck in the States, and I bet you're looking forward to getting back to Switzerland.
Yeah, hopefully it's not too cold already, but
well, take care. Have a great weekend.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye.